webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 20th of August 2015, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought coming out of the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you today from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Lenny Bruce we say, I think it's about time we gave up on religion and got back to God. And here, from Houston, Texas, is our great unteacher, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
G'day, Barris Bartlett. I am so wonderful, I don't even know what to do with myself. How about yourself?
Mate, I'm great. I had a holiday for two. Well, I didn't have a holiday for two. Actually, you had a holiday for two weeks.
I had the holiday, yeah. Made you work double.
Hey, how about that interview we had with Alexa Myers? Wasn't that something?
I'm telling you, if you were to meet Alexa, you would meet the person you heard. That's the only way I know how to put it. There is no end to her energy. There's no end to her excitement about the gospel. The girl has gone through unspeakable things with religion. This interview that you did with Alexa is, most of this stuff we get from news feeds and newspapers and the internet, but this is one of those right close to home. And I've spoken to several folks since that interview, Barris, who have informed me that they too were a part of the Bill Gothard thing, not in his inner circle as she was, much to her detriment, as it turned out. But coming to grips with the authoritarian disposition of this, quote, ministry, and submission of women and wives and people just glad that they made it out of there. So
now we have, golly, we've got people in the Gospel Revolution from all manner of backgrounds, very similar, German brethren, right through to Church of God. Any of you who are out there who are listening to this broadcast, Hutterites, anybody, I'm talking about people who were in a group that was authoritative, that was controlling. Perhaps you were told, if you leave this group, you're leaving God, you'll lose your salvation, you'll lose your family, you'll lose your friends. If that was your experience, I'd love you to call me, because I'm putting together a special on cults and how they operate. And one of the reasons I'm doing it is because, Mike, I think I mentioned this to you some time ago, I was reading a well-known Christian author, and this Christian author was a bit of a cult buster himself, and he enumerated the marks of a cult. And when I thought about it, I thought, yeah, just like every Christian organization I know, that could be applied to. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're pointing your finger, Christian cult busters, I think that you really ought to look at where the other four fingers are pointing. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to parlay this into a cult special. Haven't done a special for a while, so we're going to put that together in the next couple of months. And I just welcome anybody to give me a call on my cell phone, or which is 615-243-2754, or area code 234-564-0971, and leave a voicemail.
Well, Barris, there's a lot of these too that fell under the category of Word of Faith. We had people in Word of Faith churches who, when their children died, two cases I'm thinking of, one through cancer and the other two children died in a car crash in a snowstorm trying to get to Christian school when all of the public schools had closed. And in both cases, those families were asked to leave the church because the death of their children was a hindrance to the faith of the entire congregation.
Alexa found this in Word of Faith. It could be in a Baptist church, it could be in any kind of a church, but it's really not the church or the denomination we're looking at. We're looking at the common characteristics of authoritarian control. Now, Michael, you've been conspicuously absent for the last 2 weeks. What's the story? Was this your annual or what?
A lot has changed in this 2 weeks. This actually began before that with a diagnosis of sleep apnea. I think when I found out, Barris, I realized that I was pushing, you know, sandbags up the hill without a wheelbarrow for the last several years. And I think it was like, you know, I'm beginning to understand that I don't have to live like this. So I'm taking a break until I get this resolved. So, yeah, it was... my doctor first told me that my oxygen levels were dropping to 75% in my sleep. Dangerous, not good. And then went into the sleep clinic again. And the professional demeanor of this girl in bringing me in for my to be fitted for a CPAP machine, which is the machine that keeps you breathing instead of stopping breathing. I asked her, because nobody had really read my report to me other than the doctor telling me 75% oxygen levels that he was very concerned about. He asked me if I lived alone, and I told him yes, and that no one is here when I go to bed at night. And he was very concerned about that, that I was alone when I was asleep.
Mate, many's a time I've been concerned about that too.
I've been concerned about sleeping alone now for many years. So several things have to be decided and prescribed by you actually sleeping with one of these things on. So I normally, I'm asleep about an hour and then roll over, and then the absolute urgency to get up and go to the bathroom starts then, usually about an hour after I go to sleep, and then continues anywhere from 5 to 8 times a night. And sometimes with not that
you
many
You don't
hours
think I'm going to put that to air, do you?
Yes, you are. I had to get up to pee 5 to 8 times.
Oh, boy.
And because it's such a, really is a huge part of the story. I want people to know this because I want people that may be suffering from this to realize what the problem may be. So after what I thought was about an hour, I rolled over thinking, well, I'm, could get up and go use the restroom, but it wasn't urgent. So I thought, well, I know they need more data on how I'm sleeping and how this machine is affecting me. So I'll just roll over and go back to sleep. And so then this voice came over the intercom in my room and said, "Good morning, Mr. Williams."
"Good morning."
And my response exactly, I said, "Good morning." And she said, "Yes, good morning, Mr. Williams. I had gone to bed at 9:45. And she said, "It is 5:30 in the morning. You've been asleep for 7.5 hours.
Yeah, I guess this was your first clue that everything that the doctor had been worried about was justified.
Justified, and probably he didn't frighten me as much as I should have been frightened about my situation.
What happened then? How many days did you stay there?
No, just the one day. And I got more information from her than I did from my doctor. I asked her, I said, "So, you know, I know my oxygen levels are dropping to 75%, but isn't sleep apnea about the fact that I stop breathing in the middle of the night?" And she said, "Yes, it is." And I said, "Well, how many times do I stop breathing?" And she said, you stop breathing 80 times.
Oh, that's not my 80 times over the whole night. That's, yeah.
An hour.
An hour? That's more than once a minute. You stop breathing.
So, 80 times an hour.
So you've been giving yourself 80 chances every hour for the last 20 years to die in your sleep.
Yes. yes, for death in my sleep is exactly right. So I asked her about this. Well, why didn't I have to get up to go to the bathroom all night? And she said, Mr. Williams, she said, this problem is directly connected to your sleep apnea. She said, your kidneys are trying to keep you alive. My kidneys would wake me up by sending an urgency that I had to go to the bathroom.
Good Lord.
I was in shock.
So how are you feeling now?
I don't know how to tell you how I feel. I
guess you got one of these fancy machines.
I started out Monday.
Yeah.
They told me it'd take about a week to adjust to it, but it wasn't a real difficult adjustment because once you see that something is saving your life and causes you to feel so much better, that morning after the sleep clinic, I was like, all five of my senses were more alert. I remember taking an exit on the way home, and I thought, my gosh, there's trees on both sides here. I was so fascinated by that. but just little things. And I don't take naps during the day now. I used to have a morning nap, and I had to have an afternoon or evening nap.
Okay, children, take your beds now.
Oh, my gosh. And then wake up just so groggy and just so,
Wow. Now, you've also just passed another milestone.
I did. And what a wonderful birthday present to get. I'm telling you, the alertness of life, I'm overwhelmed. I'm so filled with joy about this huge change in my life. So, yes, I just turned 63 on August the 16th. I got so many wonderful birthday wishes on Facebook and also on my phone and emails. It was just absolutely fantastic to have people to think of you like that.
The best thing, of course, for you is, I would imagine, is that you can treat me as an equal. You can actually look at me as neither a senior nor a junior for about a month and a half.
Exactly, which I'm really depressed about that.
Yeah. well, you should be happy because after that you got to go back to calling me sir or something, haven't you? Or dad.
Right now, Barris and I are exactly the same age. But he's only got 3 months at that luxury, and then he'll be a year older than me again. So, this is the old man's club, and we're enjoying it.
Michael, this week, I just noticed a pic that Glenn Klein put up on our Facebook page. You know those pics that you see, and it's some forlorn-looking kid, and they're in the – who knows if they're real or not? And the subtext says – if I get 1,000 likes, Facebook will give me $1 for every like and I'll be able to get my cancer operated. Have you seen those things? They're disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible. Well, Glenn Klein put one up and it's a picture of Jesus holding up this placard like a kid in a class. And he says, my dad says, if I get 1 million likes, I can come back. I thought you'd like that.
That's very Glenn Klein. He can find the best things to post and get right to the point quicker than anyone. So.
My dad says if I get 1 million likes, I can come back. Well, we are in this jocular mood. Danny, he sent me this picture. It was a grab off his phone or off the Facebook of his Facebook app. And it was by a guy called Theodore Dones or Duns or Dons, I don't really care. And it says, wait for this, Michael, you're going to love it. And it's, I looked his page up, and sure enough, it's there. I think it's called Ministry of Fire, and there's a lot of people who I know that are on this page, and I don't know whether many of them have the brains to figure this one out when it appeared, but here is the text that Theodore Dones, Head Sherong of Ministry of Fire, Prophet Extraordinaire, said, "Due to circumstances beyond our control, we will not be teaching on Let the Prophet and Prophetess Speak this Monday the 3rd and Tuesday night the 4th.
Didn't he see this coming?
It's like when you see these people who believe they can see the future and you ask them why they've never won the lottery.
Exactly. That, and, you know, we have a lot of really major events taking place around the world, and none of them foretell those. I think I could do pretty good about it. I think I could come up with just, you know, in the next 30 days, I prophesy there will be a massive explosion someplace on planet Earth.
Oh, man, it must be the Lord. It has to be the Lord. Now, I've noticed, and there are a lot of people saying that something great or apocryphal or, I mean, it's everything is coming together with September 23, I think it is, only a couple of weeks away.
Oh, that's Hazel's birthday.
Sorry?
That's Hazel's birthday.
Oh, my God. It's real.
They know. My gosh. Even God's telling people it's Hazel's birthday.
You just got to stand back and in awe of God, really, don't you? But the whole thing, I mean, you've got your blood moon fool, John Rotund, Ahagi. I've got people on the web. I mean, from every asteroids are coming. The dollar is going to be switched out into some new form of currency for the USA. There is going to be earthquakes happening all the time, everywhere at the same time. There's going to be a turnaround in the spirit realm. There's going to be a manifestation of the glory. There's going to be you can take any one of these you want, and there seems to be this madness out there. I don't know if it's a full moon or not, but there's a madness out there. What do you say to these people? And there's all kinds of people out there from all kinds of backgrounds saying this now. What do you say to them when they say that the Earth is about to explode?
This is what I say to all of those prophecies. It ain't gonna happen. Now, that's not the first time I've said that, Bears. We've gone through this many, many times.
You said this before?
Yes, and whether you like my grammar or not, yes, I've said it before.
Hey, while we're on Danny, he wrote me and said, "Good evening, sir. Is there a Greek to English dictionary available that is not religious or Bible-based that you would recommend? I'd really like to have this tool to discover the truer meaning of some of these Greek words. Thanks, Daniel." And so I sent him back a message which said, "Here are a few good choices. www.lexilogos.com/English/Greek_ancient_dictionary.htm. And for those of you who want to dig deeper, and I really applaud those of you who do, there are three tools that we have at our disposal. There is Strong's Concordance, there is Kittel's, which is probably more accurate than Strong's, and there is Young's Concordance. There's another one called Cruden's. When I was a kid, we used to say Cruden's for the crude, Young's for the young, and Strong's for the strong. But between Young's and Kittel's and Strong's, you're going to get a pretty decent, usually a pretty decent definition. That would carry over. Now, Koine Greek, which is what the Bible was written in, was kind of the street Greek of the same period as classical Greek came from. And if you want to find what the meaning of a word is in the Bible, the best way you can do it is go to Strong's, find out what the Greek number is, and then look up that number every single instance of it, which is really easy now on Bible Gateway or any one of a number of online services. And then you can see how it's used in a multiplicity of settings, and that will give you exactly a rounded out picture of what that word means. So thanks for that question, Danny.
You know, Bears, let me say, that the ability to do research on your own has it's been around for a few years now. I remember when I first started listening to the Bible recorded, which for me has been a tremendous. Let me suggest, if you're going to study in context, you need to have a set of CDs that you can listen to.
Or MP3s.
Yes, MP3s. When I started, it was LPs. It was before tapes, and I found one of my wife's family members had bought the entire Bible by Alexander Scorby, and I devoured those things. Oh, my gosh. Then, of course, the very first set of tapes that came out, I got those, and I've moved right on up the line. I had the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. I had the Young's. I also had Vines, which Vines for me was really a major tool in my research also. When you dig deep, find out what those words mean. Find something where that has been recorded and read out, and go back and start, if you have to, start the whole book all over again with the understanding of this Greek word that you found in the middle of somewhere that means something you never knew it meant, because you'll be triply thrilled about the context of this. Context, oh my gosh, context, context, context. Please, as you read and study and dig, drop back and listen. Just listen to the whole thing. Just sit back in your lounge chair. Put something that where that the Bible is recorded, and keep in mind what it is you just learned, and start listening closely. I would listen like that. I'd also listen and follow along and with my eyes and read what I was listening to, looking for the understanding of why this Greek word was so different. It's a simple form of study, but man, it became a powerful tool in looking to the very specifics of a Greek word, but then going back to the bigger picture of the context. And if you go between those two, you're going to learn some wonderful things.
That's excellent. That is so well put, Mike. Some people are visually connected and other people are audibly connected. In other words, some of us learn by hearing, some of us learn by watching, and what you've just done is you connected both of those together. If I find something or a course I want to study, I suppose I listen. I call it my university on wheels, my car, because I'm always listening. I'm listening to people who impress me, make me think. I'm listening to full college courses. I suppose I do about 30 to 40 hours a week of that. And the way I do it, and I'll probably cover between I'll probably cover between 50 and 70 hours of actual listening, because what I do is I find the MP3s that I need to hear, which are just a sound format, an audio format, put them on my phone, and I have on my phone an app called Maple, and there's plenty of these around, and it will speed up.
This process of just learning, it's really a very easy thing. I mean, it had to be easy for me to be able to pick it up and really engage all of your senses when you're doing this as much as you possibly can. And it really does cause things to come alive. And let me say this. Now, you're never going to hear this from any other ministry except the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries. I don't care who it is. If you hear John Hagee say something that piques your interest, listen to the whole sermon. Now, you're going to find out more of what Mr. Hagee is exactly saying by listening to the whole thing. You see, now other ministries would tell you, when you hear something that disagrees with what you think, don't listen, throw it away, burn it, do away with it. What do we say in the Gospel Revolution? buy the series. Listen to the whole thing, because there is something so powerful about the gospel that once you get these elementary truths, gospel of peace and gospel of grace, once you get that inside you, there is the ability to discern. I remember when I started looking at that word discernment, because I was a devil caster outer. You had to have discernment. And I started studying that. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and chapter 3, it talks about this gift of discernment. And in context, I found out it was talking about being able to discern whether you're hearing legalism or whether you're hearing the gospel. I was totally blown away that this discernment, and it is a gift, folks. And if you've got the gospel in you at all, you will be able to discern the difference as to whether this is coming from a point of freedom or coming from a point of bondage. Those verses, we'll have to go through them sometime, Beerus, 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and chapter 3. And the major topic on the subject of discernment in the New Testament is not figuring out whether it's a demon of lust or gluttony. When you study the New Testament, you're going to find that the ability to discern in context, it is talking about the ability to hear the difference between what Paul is teaching and what Peter, James, and John are teaching. So listen to these guys. If you pick up a tape by Kenneth Copeland, or you hear Kenneth Copeland say something as you're passing a channel and it piques your interest and you wonder about it, listen to him. Order the tape.
I can't handle the comedy channels anymore, mate.
I know. Oh, it's not even entertaining anymore, is it? It's just it is painful to listen to when you realize the degree of deception. And I'm very grateful that I gave up on trying to figure out, do they know they're deceiving people or are they deceived themselves? That's not my job. I don't have that discernment. I don't know people's hearts. I can discern and tell you what they're saying, whether or not it is pertaining to the finished work of the cross or is it works. And you've got that, folks. Every one of you have discernment. Just don't be afraid to allow your mind to listen and to find out. Listen to what the Gospel Revolution says. Listen to what Barris says. Listen to those little videos that Jeff has compiled over the last few years. Now he's got hundreds. He's got hundreds of videos. And listen to those. And if he says something that causes you to think, and you think, but so-and-so, you know, John Hagee says this. Listen to what Jeff says. Jeff will usually recommend a series where I may have gone into depth on the subject. And go listen to John Hagee too. Don't listen to just one of us. You have the ability to think for yourself.
Because you have the truth in you, and that when you hear truth, it's going to resonate. In Psalms, it talks about the deep calling unto deep.
I love that.
Truth calls out to truth.
I love that verse. And one of the main focuses of the Gospel Revolution, Barris, is that we believe that everything that we teach that is truth is already in there.
Mm.
There is this power that we are persuaded of the cross, that the truth of the cross was revealed 2,000 years ago. It's no longer a mystery. There is a level of it that you got in your DNA.
The whole tree is in the seed.
Oh, yes. And you've got it. You see, we don't teach you things you don't know. If it is the truth, we are teaching you things you have known since birth. That is the difference. Anything that I would say that truly is the truth of the gospel, these are not things that people never knew. These are things that you've always known, folks. And I am bolstered by that. I have such a freedom about teaching because I don't feel this burden on me that it's my responsibility to get the truth across. I tell you, when I'm sitting there teaching, Barris, I see wells of knowledge sitting in front of me. I see wells of wisdom. I see wells of righteousness and perfection. Now, what's going on in the brain? I don't know. But because I am so convinced that all of this is already there, I just begin to just pull the string. Because that string is connected straight inside people's hearts, and I begin to pull on this string, and suddenly they realize something. Now, most people think it's the first time they've ever learned it. I challenge that thought. I want you to stop and think, because I've heard it too many times. You're going to go back to a time, even in your childhood, where that concept was real to you. That absolute acceptance was real. That absolute perfection was real. That unconditional love was real. And these are things we've always known. How connected you've been to it, I don't know. Life's experiences can rob us so much of that inner knowledge and intuitive knowledge of who we are. But all we're doing, folks, is reminding you who you are. We're reminding you of who you are. Because if you don't know who you are based on the conclusive work of the cross, you are going to continually struggle to find an identity through what you do. And the difference between having an identity based in your performance and an identity that is rooted in the love of God and the work of the cross is the difference between peace and torment. That is the difference between the two. Because when you find identity based in performance, you're going to feel good sometime. But let me tell you something. When you don't feel good, you're going to feel worse than worse. And the power of the gospel is this stabilizing force for the minds of those of us who want to get something done. We want to get something done, but our identity is not tied to it. Oh, that's such freedom, Barris. It is such freedom.
This week we heard from Paul Vigors in the UK, and Paul writes, "Hi, thank you for making the recordings available from Calgary. I am learning so much. Guys, the Calgary Summer Series are up now. This is where Michael taught on the history of heaven. Really, something you just, I mean, just get it. That's all I can say. For our friends in Cullman, we are shipping you because you are so good to us and so warm to us, and you listened to us when we were still formulating. We had all the ideas. It was a question of putting them together in a way that made sense. And we're sending you all a free copy of of the History of Heaven from recorded in Calgary, Canada, just recently. I was fortunate enough to share the platform with Mike, and I was teaching on the history of the two Gospels, two views of the good news, and Michael also taught on two views of the good news. Without him, it wouldn't have been half the quality of content that it was. You can get both of those up now on the web by going to our webpage and just looking for the link, or going to the Facebook page. But Paul Vigors, Michael says, "Thank you for making the recordings available from Calgary. I'm learning so much. I have one question concerning heaven. In 2 Corinthians 12, verses 2 to 4, Paul mentions a man being caught up to the third heaven. How do we reconcile these verses with previous verses stating no man has ascended to heaven except he who came down from heaven? Thank you, Paul Vigors in the UK."
It is very conspicuous that we found out in prior verses that nobody has ascended into heaven except he that came down from heaven. If you read Paul's account of this, there's not a whole lot of conclusion you're going to be able to come to. Paul is vague about whether or not he's talking about himself or not. He's vague about what actually happened in all of this. It almost seems as though he's speaking facetiously about this notion. There is no teaching on this. First and second and third heavens are not places.
Well, let's have a read of these verses, and I believe that we can, well, let's just have a read. I knew a man, firstly he starts in verse 1, it's not expedient for me, doubtless, to glory, but I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. In other words, he's making out like he doesn't want to talk about this, but then he talks about it anyway. He says, I knew a man in Christ above 14 years ago. Now that time would coincide from the writing of this epistle to when Paul was in the desert. Most scholars agree that he's talking about himself, but yes. Again, it's uncertain. But here, this is certain. He says, I knew a man in Christ about 14 years ago, whether in the body I cannot tell or whether out of the body I cannot tell. God only knows. Such a one caught up to the third heaven. Now, was he in the body or was he out of the body? Was he actually caught up into the third heaven, or was the third heaven brought to him where his body was? As Paul says, I cannot tell. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I can't tell. God only knows. How that he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which is not lawful for a man to utter. Whatever it was, this man couldn't even talk about it. It didn't seem to stop John, who's generally called the Revelator, but it seems to have stopped Paul if it was himself. So we don't know. Paul Vigors in the UK. This is so vague as to be, you could never build a doctrine on it.
No, exactly. Because you don't even know whether Paul's being facetious about it. You don't know whether he's the experience is real, or is he mocking others who claim these type of experiences, which almost seems that he is. Challenging those who seem to have a superior spirituality over him. Is he just making a point instead of making a doctrinal statement? I would be hard-pressed to say that Paul was making a doctrinal statement, because he doesn't teach on the third heaven. There is no teaching by Paul about the third heaven, regardless of the statement.
This week, Michael, we heard from executive producer Victor Brennan.
Now, what does executive producer mean?
Executive producers are people who have given over $150 a month or $1,800 annually. These people get an official executive producer certificate, which means that they can put that on their cards and on LinkedIn and anywhere else. And if anyone calls us, we will confirm it.
Yes.
So he's talking about 1 Corinthians 1 through 1 and 12. He says, do you think that this is actually Paul who wrote that part of 1 Corinthians? It seems a bit odd. Verse 5, to deliver such an one unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh, so that the spirit might be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus. Your glorying is not good. Don't you know that even a little leaven leavens the whole lump? In Galatians, he refers to the leaven of the law. Here he talks about perverse behavior. In my opinion, this might be spurious. What do you think?
The wonderful thing about 1 Corinthians is that we have a 2 Corinthians, that we can compare what is said. I think the most powerful thing that we get out of 2 Corinthians is the understanding that Paul has grown tremendously in his understanding of the gospel after his letter to the 1 Corinthians. So as you read 1 Corinthians, remember that the very same person that Paul was referring to in this situation to turn him over to Satan for the destruction of his flesh, that his soul might be saved in the day of the Lord, that very same Paul came back and rebuked the people for doing that. when Paul comes back in 2 Corinthians, he says, I'm really kind of upset with you guys. You're treating this guy really bad. He's done something wrong, but you walk to the other side of the street when he's coming down the road. You won't eat with him anymore. And I'm telling you now, that's not the way to handle this. You should treat him like a brother, even though he's been caught in his fault. Well, now let me tell you, assuming that Paul may have written both of these, the only thing that you can conclude is that Paul has matured greatly in his understanding. Folks, when people begin to get upset about moral things, it's very easy to take on that indignation about those moral things and begin to apply spiritual meaning to them. There is no spiritual meaning to morality, but the tendency to get caught up in that is very, very easy. I think the possibility of Paul getting caught up in their zeal about this situation is very real. We also can, know that it is possible. We do have many accounts that, at least from what other researchers of Bible text, New Testament letter text, say, that many of Paul's letters were added to, things were inserted, added on to the end by others. So we don't really know. But we know that the issue of turning someone over to Satan for the destruction of their flesh, there is no gospel understanding that would validate such a statement.
Did you see that story, Michael, about a father letting his daughter drown in Dubai?
I didn't see that, Paris.
Okay. This is an absolute doozy, and it comes from Islam, but it's not. It's by no means limited to Islam, this kind of stupidity. The father of a 20-year-old girl, where is this? This is the Express Tribune, International New York Times reporting. The father of a girl, 20-year-old girl, let his daughter drown at a beach. She's 20. This is an adult child. Let his daughter drown at a beach in Dubai rather than have her saved by, strange, unquote, men of a rescue team. The man, said to be an Asian, very likely Malaysian or Indonesian, because there's the two, the biggest population of Muslims in the world, had taken his family to the beach when his daughter began to drown and screamed for help. However, when rescuers rushed to help, her father stopped them, which led to the girl's death. Father took his wife and kids to the beach for a picnic. Kids were swimming. Two rescue men tried to help the girl. However, this is the police, a deputy director of Dubai Police Search and Rescue Department talking. He said there was one obstacle which prevented them from reaching the girl and helping them. This obstacle was the belief of this man, who considered that if these men touched his daughter, then this would dishonor her. He continued, the father was a tall and strong man, started pulling and preventing the rescue men. He told them that he prefers his daughter being dead than being touched by strange men. Now, we've seen this happen with Jehovah's Witnesses and the idea of a blood transfusion. We've seen this with fundamentalists who don't want medical help for whatever reason, and their children die. We've seen this on a number of levels, Michael. What do you put this down to?
Boy, ignorance. what else could you say about it other than just utter ignorance? And again, this goes back to finding your value in what you do rather than who you are. Of course, these things become paramount. If your identity is found in a rule, then the rule will cause death. All rules cause death if you find your identity in them. And there's hardly a rule in the book that if you abide by it as a source of identity, at some point it has the potential of causing death rather than life. very strange thing about rules and laws, and that's one of them. The in this man's case, goodness, his religion over who else's religion? Like you said, this could be found in any religion around the world where that we allow, permit, and even cause the death of our own children because we can't allow the rules to be broken to save life or to give life. Just like you said with blood transfusion. No blood transfusions. That's a rule. They have their reasons for the rule. But if you find your identity in that rule and you can't break that rule, it will lead to death. This rule about not being touched by strange men led to the death of this man's daughter. The law produces death. Could we have any better open and marked demonstration other than the two situations that you have mentioned? Forbidding of to eat shellfish, that could cause death. You could starve to death with good food sitting right in front of you. You could starve your children to death because of good food sitting right in front of you because you can't break the law. The law leads to death. And in so many levels of that, death is always present when the rules are honored above life.
Michael, you know that I play fast and loose with my money, and I have put out another challenge. It started off as a $100 reward. I raised it to $500, and now it's sitting at $1,000, which is a reward, to anyone who can give me an example of the actual word antinomian or antinomianism in any of the Greek sources for the Bible. Now, what I mean by that, you won't find the word antinomian in there because it's an English word, which was coined by Martin Luther in the 1600s as a word to describe people who took grace just, well, you know, too far. Mm-hmm. And I tried to source this in the Bible. Nowhere. I can't find it anywhere. Now, in the Greek I'm talking about, the word would be antinomos or antinomia. Doesn't occur there. Anomos or anomia is there. Now, that simply means outside of the law or without the law. Nomos means the law, anti means against, or a means without or outside of. Now, I can find plenty of places in the New Testament where it talks about being outside of the law. In fact, Paul absolutely prizes it. He says you're going to be either in the law or outside of the law, under legalism or outside of legalism. You're going to be under grace and peace or you're going to be in the rules deal. Paul calls being under the law nomianism or lawism, legalism, be the same word in the English. And outside of the law, he calls it outside of the law. Outside of so I've been looking for this, and I'm just going to tease everybody because if I have my way, this is a big thing. This is a thing which every single, as far as I can tell, every single Christian denomination, every single Christian denomination has at one time or other pointed out the heretics that they love to hate, and said, they're antinomian. They are against the law. Anyone knows that the Ten Commandments count. You shouldn't kill somebody. So people who say that, like Paul, that anything, all things are permissible, but not all things are expedient. Anyone like that, essentially antinomian. And what pushed me into this thing, Michael, was the fact that we have these two gospels coming out of the New Testament, the two views of the good news. So I just wanted to throw that in there, not so much to talk about it today. We'll do that down the road, but just to...
No, it is a really important subject. I remember the subject coming up as I first began to teach the difference between grace and law and antinomianism, which I didn't have a clue what in the world they were talking about, started being thrown around. being against the law really depends on where you stand. Anybody can use the term antinomianism. I think it's funny that we could use the term antinomianism because truly we can point out in Christianity where that all of Christianity is against the law. They don't take the law in its full content as the gospel revolution does. We accept the God's law in every jot and tittle. We receive it. We do not fragment the law. As Jesus said, he didn't come to fragment the law, but to fulfill it. And any time that you keep part of the law and think that that makes you righteous, but you don't keep the other half of the law or even another single law, you're standing in a position that could be labeled by Martin Luther's brand new word that he came up with is antinomianism. They disrespect God's law. They're against God's law because they don't treat it equally. And the power of the gospel is that we treat the law equally. It is all the same. It is just as condemning to eat a pork chop as it is to murder. And when you take that in its entirety, there's something powerful to be learned. So as you take us into this, Barris, I think we're going to learn a lot. And I know that every gospel revolutionary out there has been accused of antinomianism.
Yes.
So we get to address this in the light of what the word actually means. I did not know that Martin Luther came up with this word to defend his position to say here, this far, and no more. And that's really what he developed the word for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all my life that I'd heard the word, I would have honestly presumed it was a biblical word.
Well, it sure sounds like a Greek word right out of the Bible, doesn't it?
Doesn't it though? but even James the Jerk, he had the sense to know that whoever shall keep the whole law yet offend in one point, he's guilty of the lot. Even poor old dilatory, slow-thinking James, the most legalistic probably of all of the disciples, and of whom there is no record anywhere that he ever, A, followed Jesus, or B, converted to Jesus' teaching. Even he was smart enough to figure this out. If you either keep the whole law or you don't keep it at all, as Paul says in Galatians.
Well, this will be a wonderful study. I'm glad you brought it up.
Michael, today we are going to be really rather honored to be a fly on the wall in a conversation between one of our executive producers and one of our Gospel Revolutionary fans. And that is between Daniel Rouse and his auntie, Pat Salonen. And we're going to read this because he sent it to us. And I love this. I don't know about you. He says, the subject is my encounter
with the devil.
Mm. Oh, you sounded like a cow then.
Mm.
Oh, there you are. That's, you got to do it in a, where are we? Know how you do it. You got to get a can and speak into the can. Get that nice reverb on your voice. Hello, Michael. Daniel writes. He says, I'm happy to share my story with anyone. Hope it will help someone. And I also look forward to hearing your response on the podcast. Hey, listen, Daniel. You can't force your way onto the podcast. Oh, yes, you can. So here is the conversation. Daniel and his auntie Pat. Daniel says, so another way my thinking has changed. I prayed for a man tonight who claimed to have been tormented by a demon. He said he talked to it and everything. I know this man. He's a normal businessman. So I thought, well, I don't know how to handle this in the light of my new understanding of the gospel. So I said, well, I'll wing it. Now, you need to understand that Daniel and his father, if I have this right, pastoring three churches up in Minnesota. And he said he's happy to share his story with anyone, so I'm not going to so we presume that we can disclose his identity. He says, so I said, well, I'll wing it. No fear of being attacked by this quote-unquote demon. Started praying, and the man fell to his knees screaming and hollering. I continued to pray, looking for guidance from the Holy Spirit. He continued to scream. Then I just sternly said, okay, that's enough. You can be at peace now. Encouraged the man to pray in the Holy Spirit, seemed to be the right move, and he became aware of the peace. We know it was always there. You could see it in his eyes. A year ago, I would have testified that I cast the spirit out. Today, I say I helped a troubled soul see the peace he already has in Jesus. No demons, just anxiety tormenting his soul. Auntie Pat chimes in now, and she says, now, you've got to... Michael, I'm going to let you explain this situation, okay, so that people know who Auntie Pat is and all of that. Auntie Pat chimes in now, and she says, Dan, interesting that he knew how to scream and holler and talk to demons. Mike could tell you, that's Mike Williams, could tell you some whoppers for sure. I remember him saying that when he stopped talking to demons, they stopped talking to him. Now, Daniel says, yeah, I was never into that. Funny idea that people came up with. Auntie Pat says, our emotions come from our thinking, so just wrong belief systems can cause this. Daniel says, yep, and this guy has been overstressed lately. His mother is dying and he is having some business challenges. Maybe a little hollering will help. Ha ha. Peace. Peace, Daniel Rouse.
Well, wisdom throughout, Daniel and Auntie Pat. Pat Salonen has been a dear friend of mine, not just a gospel revolutionary, she and her husband, Richard. And goodness, we're going on 30 years now, I'm sure. So the interesting thing about Pat is that she had agoraphobia, which is the fear of open spaces. She could not leave her house. The process of learning the gospel, and I'm sure Pat went through deliverance sessions and everything else, but it was the gospel that freed her, and to where that leaving her house and being in open spaces, it's not even an issue anymore. So she has, number one, she has firsthand knowledge of this issue of, you know, something's a demon instead of just the stress of life is causing this.
Where did you meet?
You would have to ask Pat that one. I'm sure it was a meeting somewhere, probably in Wisconsin. It's been just really amazing. The big picture of this is a family of several pastors, her brothers, pastors of churches, Word of Faith movement, and then here their sister Pat suddenly becomes this gospel revolutionary over the last couple of decades. So this has been an ongoing thing. This young man, Auntie Pat, would have been deeply involved in the gospel revolution when this young man, Daniel, was born.
Wow.
So history. There's a lot of history here. I was very impressed by, because, you know, Daniel has never been involved in this part of the Word of Faith movement, the devil casting out branch that we got deeply involved in, and had the wisdom because of just the gospel being there to handle this in the manner that he did. And yes, Pat was correct. I could tell you stories. Oh, my goodness.
Now, Daniel is pastoring a normal kind of a Christian church, isn't he?
Yes, they're word of faith type churches, I believe.
So what do you think about how many stars does he get? Oh. Is he a five-star performer or is he?
Oh, a superstar performer.
Why?
Number one, he didn't try to correct the guy. He didn't try to convince him contrary, but he allowed the guy to have this experience that the guy felt he needed, but he terminated it in a way that proved that Daniel was correct. Daniel knew he wasn't casting out a devil. The man gets the release of what he thinks a devil being cast out would cause. And now I'm sure over the time coming, Daniel will be able to teach this man what exactly did take place. You know, a lot of times when you come to understand something, many times it can cause you to become rigid about not being involved in any of the old doctrines. People ask me many times, you know, concerning prayer, you know. I don't pray for sick people. So, but Mike, what would you do if you were in a situation and you were in a hospital room and the family was grieving, a child was dying and they asked you to pray? What would you do? I would pray. And I would pray the kind of prayer that I knew that would be most comforting to these people. I know nothing's going to happen. They probably also know nothing is going to happen. But that moment is not the time to discuss whether or not I am in agreement with doing such a thing or not. And Daniel showed great wisdom in handling it that way. He didn't just say, oh, man, come on, you know, there's no such thing as demon possession. Let's get past this. Instead, he walked this man through what the man felt he needed to experience. He terminated it at the point where Daniel was through with it and said, let's just walk on from this. Kudos, stars. What a wonderful pastor. If you need a pastor and you're anywhere in the northern tier states, it's worth driving there to get to a man that has this type of wisdom to deal with serious situations, but not to be fooled by them. I couldn't say more. As we were listening to this whole situation, for some reason I had a flashback to a meeting in Michigan, and it was down near the end of my persuasion that I was actually casting out devils, beginning to think differently. And so I just concluded a meeting in a church that there's seven steps up to the platform area and a semicircle platform, as best I remember. And so I'd concluded the service and stayed around finally I got to where I realized that this sneaking out the back door stuff is just really kind of stupid. But I did what I was taught. And bow your heads. What does bow your heads mean? We're going to close the service. That means you got to give me time to get out of the room. And to where I can't be bothered with you folks. So I had come to the end of that and was making myself available as there's so many changes going on. So this gentleman, businessman in a suit, walked up on the platform before I had time to even walk down. And he said, very dignified, and he says, Brother Mike, says, I drove here how many hundreds of miles, I don't remember. And he said, but I have a spirit of lust, and I would like for you to cast it out of me, please. So the service had been dismissed. The church was still full, people turning and, you know, greeting one another as they got ready to leave. The pastor was down off the platform by then, over to the right. And so I laid hands on this man, and I did what I normally did, and I said, come out of him in Jesus' name. And this man begin to thrash and writhe, and somehow my hand got caught in his tie and his collar. So he goes down, I go down on top of him.
He did have a spirit of lust.
Evidently. And my hand is caught in his shirt and tie somehow. And then he rolls over on his stomach and gets on his knees. By the time he rolls onto his stomach and gets on his knees, I'm sitting on his back, tied with one hand like a bull rider, and he begins to buck, and it is a total scene of somebody riding a bull, and it's on stage.
Stories from the dark side of my ministry.
Ooh, Lordy. So I look over to the pastor like, help, you know, and he's over there laughing at me. So I yell, come out two or three more times. Suddenly the horse collapsed to the stage floor. I get my hand untangled, and the businessman stands up, straightens his tie, and says, thank you very much, and walked off the stage.
So you didn't have the presence of mind that Daniel Rouse had.
No, I had not progressed as far as Daniel did. I could have used Daniel very much that day, for sure. And, Barris, let me say, you know, this whole issue of demon possession and dealing with the devil, I think Pat wrapped it up the best that I will ever be able to say it.
Aunt Pat.
Yes.
Aunt Pat.
And now she would not like me calling her Aunt Pat, but...
Oh, okay.
She really summed up my experience with it after, you know, and I know all the verses about resist the devil and he will flee, and the devil is going about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. That was written by Peter. I think if you read that in context, he's talking about people who are buying into this grace message that the devil is going about trying to deceive people into accepting the gospel of grace. But whatever these people meant by this, the overriding factor is that we know that Jesus was manifest to destroy the works of the devil, not to alter them, not to minimize them, but to destroy. And so somebody might ask, Mike, to what degree do you believe the devil is destroyed? I believe he's destroyed to the same equivalent that sin has been destroyed. To the very same equivalent. To what degree has sin been destroyed? In part. Sin has not been destroyed in part, but in whole. So the works of the devil have been destroyed in equal with the issue of sin. And it's good to be free, folks. I used to have more conversations with the devil than I did with God. So the whole issue of, goodness, I knew how to resist the devil, renounce the devil, rebuke the devil,
reject the devil,
all of these and a dozen more, I am sure, and taught on them thoroughly. At one time, by many folks, I was called America's foremost authority on demonology. And I was introduced that way on certain stages, for sure.
That was before they realized you were the devil.
Yes, indeed. It really does seem, though, that in Peter's writings, that he's kind of referring to resisting the devil from accepting this message of grace. You know, he's wandering about, you know, trying to convince you that you don't have to keep the law.
Well, some things never change. You've got people like Joseph Prince and Andrew Womack, and I mean, you've got just dozens of people now chiming in on the web saying how this message of grace, or whatever they want to call it, is heresy. And I would have been concerned about that a couple of years back, but I rather like that now, Michael.
Exactly. It's such a clear position. The one thing that with the gospel revolution is our position is not vague on any point. There is no vagueness at all on any point of what we teach. Doesn't mean that there's not room to learn, but we're not vague about what we teach. We're not double-minded about what we teach. Very single-minded about the entire conclusiveness of the gospel, the fractal nature of the gospel. If you hear one part of it, you've heard it all. If you hear it all, you've heard the one part in that. So it is very powerful, but I talked to the devil more than I talked to God back in those days, Barris, in rebuking and resisting and renouncing.
Rejecting. Don't forget rejecting.
And rejecting. And the amazing thing was I could hear the devil talk. I mean, I could hear what he had to say. But when I stopped talking to him, for some reason, he stopped talking to me.
Boom, boom.
So I don't get any of that anymore. And the thing of it is that all of the situations that I would have rebuked or resisted or whatever, you know, they've had as many good outcomes as they would have had I done all of that. And there's been a few that's not been good outcomes, which was the same as when I did that. So I find experience has told me there is zero value in dealing with the devil in this manner of giving him a place of presumed authority to where that I have to resist him. I don't have to resist him because he has no authority. Why would you have to resist something that doesn't have any authority or power whatsoever?
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Menominee. I'm an Amazon Prime user, and this book is the only 5-star book I have ever seen on Amazon. It's in the top 1% of all book sales on Amazon and is without question the best book touching authentic spirituality I have ever read. The 2 series we recorded in Calgary a few weeks ago is now up for access, and you can go to the website and find them and download them for a small, small fee. You know, $1 a week is nothing. I mean nothing. But here at the Gospel Revolution, it can make all the difference for somebody just like you starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value-for-value model here. If you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating $1 a week or $1 a day. Why don't you call our office on 321, area code 321-220-4373. Speak to Jeff Robertson about what you can do, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. So now, it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from Houston, Texas, and Michael Williams. And also, I did not get to, because of my sabbatical, I did not get to thank the folks for the pledge drive. You guys made it completely successful. I'm very pleased to let you know that the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries stands in the most stable position financially that we've had in many, many years because of your efforts. Thank you very much. We have a lot to do. Keep up the good works, folks, and we're going to keep it up. We treasure good works. We just don't give them spiritual value. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, And join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I bet it's better.